Good morning, everyone.
Yes.
As some of you may know, I'll be leaving very shortly, and hopefully not dropping my phone. Yes, so goodbye for a while, as long as I get my visa, which I don't have yet, and manage not to get COVID in the coming week, which is very likely, really, given how many people seem to be getting COVID around this time. Yes, so please be patient with me as I panic and stumble through this presentation. So a brief sort of overview of what's happening. So I'll be heading over to Japan and living in the suburb of Higashimurayama for a year or so. And I forgot to include a picture of the map of the place, but you guys can Google that because the suburb has a very memorable name, I'm sure. So my visa is in progress right now, and they did advise that you have like a week or so after applying for your visa. And I applied for it last Wednesday, so hopefully all good. I have a COVID test on the coming Tuesday, which I require before going over. And my flight is next Friday on the 29th of July. Yeah, so those are some details of, you know, what's happening, yes. But why, you know? So why are you going to Japan specifically? And why are you going at all is the question. And I think this is one of those things that I've struggled with, in the sense of when, like, my friends, whether Christian or non-Christian, find out that I'll be leaving very soon for an extended period of time, they sort of have this question and they ask it and they expect a very sort of short and immediate answer. And I've struggled so much to sort of articulate the reason, and especially like without, I felt like I needed more preparation and more time to sort of explain sort of why I'd be going. So yes, to help myself along, I've constructed this not very much to scale timeline on the events that culminated up till this point, and the decision to fly shortly. Yes, so I was born in the year 2000, yes, and 2000, and these are kind of like the key points, I suppose, in this journey, so to speak. So it all starts in 2010, which is the initial interest stage, you know. Like, it all starts somewhere. I could have easily been into Korean dramas or, I don't know, French sitcoms instead. And that way, I would certainly not have, in high school in 2012, chosen to study Japanese. So it starts early on in around 2010 with us moving to Carlingford and the local library stocking some volumes of manga, which we read and then discovered anime from. And then from there, an interest in, or not so much an interest, but I already had some familiarity with the Japanese language, and so I chose to pursue it in high school, which is the pictures. Oh, yes, I went to Cheltenham Girls High School. It was a great high school. And the two pictures up top were our Japanese textbooks for language learning. And so I studied Japanese in high school over the sort of 6 years or so. So that's kind of the beginning. And also, yeah, so, and then the next kind of 5 or so years passed between 2012 and 2017. I think I was saved at the beginning of 2014, but other than that, no sort of major milestones in this sort of thing. Yes, and then 2017 is kind of the key year in which sort of things seem to happen, yes. And the thing about 2017 was, after having studied Japanese for about 5 or so years, so I'm sort of at the beginning of year 12, so in term 4, because year 12 starts in term 4, of 2016, and, you know, as the school holidays are rolling around and exams are over and everything, our Japanese teacher sort of introduces to us this program, and it's a program in which you can go over to Tokyo for a very, very short period of time. It's about like less than 2 weeks, on a homestage thing where you attend school over there as well, and basically everything is paid for and you only need to buy your tickets. And, you know, that sounds like a very good deal, right? Although back then I didn't consider that the beginning of the year is kind of peak travel time, and that's when tickets were the most expensive. But anyhow, like, you know, not thinking much of it because, you know, my parents never expressed any possibility which they would allow me to leave the country by myself under any circumstances. I didn't think much of it, but, you know, I brought it up over dinner and said, oh, you know, there's this thing. Oh, yes, by the way, it was like a scholarship program because, like, the Tokyo Olympics were coming up. Back then, they thought that they were coming up and didn't know that they would be delayed because of COVID. So, yes, that was the sort of context. And for some surprising reason, my parents were actually like, oh, why didn't you go? And I was kind of, oh, really? So shocked by that. But, yes, I went through the very short application process. And my application was approved, and you know, I'd just be flying at the very beginning of the year. I think it was like very early January, just off the new year or something, and staying there for a week or so with a host family in Tokyo and attending school there for a while. And before I left, I was, you know, telling people. And one thing that sort of stuck with me, or, you know, I have kind of like impressed into my memory at some point, is sort of telling Neil, and Neil going, oh yes, and now you will take this as a great opportunity to share the gospel with the Japanese people. And I totally did not connect with that. I was like, oh yes, of course there will be so many opportunities for me to do that. But yes, it was something that stayed with me. And another bit of context was around this time, actually, I was studying Extension 2 English in high school. And for that, you actually have to do like this project that you submit for your HSC major work. And for my project, I was planning on doing this thing about like life in general. And I was going around this period of time interviewing people about like, you know, what do you think the meaning of life is? And you know, what do you think is the highest point of life? You know, the climax, so to say, like that sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, that was a very good opportunity because I just kept asking those questions when I went to Japan, to people who answered in Japanese. And yes, one thing that kind of stuck with me again is I was having this sort of conversation because my host family knew that I was a Christian, and everything was written very explicitly in my application as I sort of tried to express interest in visiting churches in Japan. It did not happen. We had this conversation about sort of values and sort of ways of thinking, and in which a lot of my beliefs came up. And then later on, I remember as we were sort of turning in for the evening, my host sister, who I shared a room with, kind of said to me, you know, so how do you become a Christian? Do you like fill in a form or something? And like at that point, it struck me as, oh, okay, it's not very common knowledge here what Christianity is and how it works. And that was kind of like one sort of aspect that 2017 planted in my head. Oh yeah, here are some pictures of my trip, of just the classrooms. Did you know that they're using blackboards still there, even though we have, you know, whiteboards and interactive things? You would think that Japan is a very high-tech country, but somehow it's still very, you know, it clings onto its, you know, tried and true things. I was complaining the other day about how Japanese websites feel like they're stuck like 5 years ago with very colorful and lots of text and a very sort of basic format. Oh, yes, but yeah, you guys can look that up in your own time. Yes. Another interesting thing in this photo is if you look at the big photo toward the center, that's a sort of a road in a neighborhood in which the cars also drive on. It's very narrow. And when the cars come, and the lines in the ground are kind of like drawn in for the footpath. So when the cars come, you kind of just place yourself against the side of the walls and they drive slowly past you. Yes. Very different to Australia in terms of space. Oh, yes. And the other thing about 2017 is that I returned from this trip with sort of these interesting observations and come straight into a movie that had come out around this time. So end of 2016, beginning of 2017, by the name of Silence. which I'm not sure if any of you have watched or heard of. But it's basically set in probably 1600s-ish Japan. So one thing that people don't know, okay, so here are some stats on Christianity in Japan. So Japan has a very low Christian population compared to a lot of places in the world. And it's probably around the 1% mark, give or take. I'm not really sure how many are nominal, and that sort of includes all the denominations from sort of Catholicism all the way to everything else. And a lot of people don't know that at one point in history, Japan had much more Christians, and that was when Christianity was first introduced around the end of the 1500s. When it was first introduced, I believe by Portuguese missionaries, at the end of the 1500s, it took off quite a bit. But at the same time, it was quickly repressed because the Japanese believers, maybe under the influence of the priests who thought that Buddhism and Shintoism were, we need to destroy the idols and everything, went around sort of destroying or trying to sort of vandalize, essentially, other religious places and their sort of monuments or important things. And so it was seen sort of as a threat to national unity and thus repressed. And then later on, as it seemed like Christianity was growing and it was becoming sort of a political force, they sort of just outlawed it altogether. And that was kind of early 1600s, maybe around 1610 or so. And at this time, actually, it was kind of just mass execution of Christians. But then they realized that it didn't seem to be working, like just killing off the Christians, as an example. The Christians themselves were more like, oh, it's okay, we're martyring. So they didn't think of it as like a negative thing, and it didn't sort of stop the Christianity in Japan. And so they turned to this new tactic, which basically what they did was they asked people to publicly sort of give up their faith. So they were told to step on a picture of Christ, essentially, or sort of spit at the cross. And if you didn't do that, you would be tortured until you did. Sort of, there was always like a way out. Like, we'd stop torturing you as soon as you apostatize. And they would love to do this, especially with like key figures in the Christian community. And they would want to make it very public. So that's the setting of this movie, Silence. And it's essentially about two young priests who travel to Japan during this time where Christianity is becoming outlawed to find their teacher. And they see the persecution of the Japanese Christians there. And then they later on find out that their teacher has sort of turned his back on the faith as well because of sort of the hardships that he had to endure. And one thing that kind of struck me about this movie was that, like, language and communication, like how these kind of men who go there have a very basic understanding of the culture and the language, and you can see how that is a big struggle for them as they try and work through interpreters, and that people can misinterpret like these big concepts. And at the end, like, of the day, it almost becomes very religious in the sense that it's very external. Like, give us a bead of your rosary, please, or make us like an image of the cross that we can keep to ourselves. And, you know, the priest struggles to sort of take it further than that at times because of these limitations. So Silence was a movie that, like, really struck me and sort of stayed with me for some reason. Maybe because I had been learning Japanese for, like, almost 6 years at that point. Yes. And also I made a lot of people around me watch it. Yes. So 2017 was also another major sort of pivotal point in my life, in the sense that it was the year in which I did my H2C. The H2C was so, so stressful because, first of all, I had a visual arts major work, and I have really, really, really bad procrastination problems. So it was just procrastination until like nearly when it was due, and then sort of no sleep, coffee, energy drinks, worrying that I would be failing the subject, sort of thing. And I don't know, 2017 was a very low point in the sense that, you know, I was just so stressed all the time. Like I felt like I'd hit very like rock bottom. And one of the reasons for this is I wanted to do well in my HSC, right? And the main reason I wanted to do well is actually because I wanted to get into this very specific course at UCID, the University of Sydney. And that course was International and Global Studies. And it was like the ATAR cutoff was reasonably sort of, it wasn't like a easily achievable sort of, I just sail through this, no problem, sort of thing. And I don't know, I just felt like when I was in year 12, I was like, if I don't get into UCID, my life's over. Like my reputation will be in shambles if people find out that I got like into some other university, and like in all sort of fields, it would just all be over. It was almost like if I didn't get into UCID, there would be, you know, it'd just be no life afterwards or something. And, you know, it was at this kind of low point of, you know, 4 a.m. and, you know, still doing my visual arts major work and feeling like, you know, oh, it's the end of everything and I have no energy. And actually, I spent a lot of 2017 in prayer, because I experienced very much that when you hit rock bottom, sometimes you don't even want to talk to anyone. You just want to pray and cry and really that sort of rotation. But I was praying at 4 a.m. after, like, sort of drinking some coffee and wanting to continue my major work. And because I had no peace at this point, it was just anxiety, stress, why is this happening sort of time. And it, like, and I was praying on the lines of the song that we sang earlier, and it was, this life I live is not my own. And I don't really know why I was praying it, but it was, I was just saying stuff. And I don't know, it struck me very clearly at that point that I'm not living like I believe these words. Like, I have my own plans for my life, and that is to go to UCID and continue in sort of this imagined pathway in my mind in which everything would sort of work out. And I was definitely not living according to my beliefs. And it was at that point that it sort of all cleared up, in the sense that was, I don't need to get into UCID because this life I live is not my own. I can go to another university. I could potentially be more useful to the Lord in another university. And, you know, ultimately, it's all in His hands, and it doesn't matter where I go, essentially. And so from that point on, I had peace for my HSC, I suppose. But that was also a point in my life in which I realized, and from then I was like, I would strive to live my life in such a way that aligns with my beliefs, because I had clearly not been living that way before. So, you know, I believe this, and so I will live in this way. And so life goes on, and in 2018 I make it into University of Sydney, and I continue my study of Japanese, and UCID was nothing like I envisioned it to be, and more my dreams were crushed, and had a miserable time there in some ways, but also university was a great time of my life in general, just not the UCID part of it. Yes, and I don't know, I felt like university was a wonderful time of growth in some sense. And I graduated, or I finished my course at the end of 2021, and it was kind of like crossroads, you know, it's graduation, where to now? And especially because I did international and global studies, it's one of those degrees, probably because it's in the arts, where there's no sort of set job or like career path when you come out. It's kind of like, oh, well, you can do anything, you know, use your resume to apply anywhere, or you can take a different pathway, you know, become a language teacher, become an interpreter, or, you know, try and work for the UN, work for some sort of charity, or, you know, that sort of thing. And I did feel very much at the crossroads of, you know, where do I go from here? And especially you kind of look around, and I don't know, I've always kind of thought, you know, full-time work, like inevitable because you need to survive. But at the same time, so time consuming, you know? Like, if I really wanted to live my life every single day for the Lord, I just felt like full-time work would sap away, you know, a good 70% of my energy and time. And, you know, is that really the way to live? And, you know, looking over my options and considering what I believe, right? So living in such a way in accordance with my beliefs, what do I believe? Well, I believe that life on earth is temporary, you know. I believe that, you know, I'm living this life to serve the Lord. I believe that He's coming again. And, you know, so how am I going to live my life in accordance with that, to give my life to serve Him? And it was kind of like, should I really, you know, start applying for sort of more long-term positions and jump into the full-time or work game? And, you know, Japan has still stuck with me through all these years, that movie silence and that short experience. And I kind of thought, you know, why not consider going, you know, over there, right, for like a time and see, you know, if that's the Lord's leading. I don't know. After I watched Silence and after my HSC, I actually had this fixation on Japan, in which was like, I'm going to go to Japan for this purpose in the future. But after sort of... 4 years, long years at UCID, that was not so much at the very forefront of my mind, although it was still there. Yes, so I sort of run this idea past my parents and kind of decide, okay, so why didn't, you know, I, you know, not go into full-time work straight away in the sort of conventional sense and try this for a while. You know, I'll go to Japan and see what it's like there, see if it makes sense for me to, you know, stay there more long-term, basically. Yes. And so I need an avenue. I need, like, a way to do that. You know, I can't just fly over there by myself and never leave or, you know, because, you know, you need a visa to stay more than 3 months or right now to do anything. And, you know, I do remember Kylie, from the camp I went to when I was saved, and also from when she came. And I know that she's with One Mission Society, and she's spoken about it before. So I'm like, okay, that's an organization that isn't, you know, dodgy, you know, doesn't have strange roots that I need to be aware of or something like that. And, you know, after sort of browsing a few sort of missionary websites on, like, Japan, I was like, oh, why don't I just... Their website, OMS Australia's website, was the easiest to navigate because it was just one page. And at the bottom of the page was contact us. And I was like, oh, so easy. Press the button, type like a small message of, oh, I'm interested in going over to Japan for a year or so. I've just graduated. And then they got back in contact with me. And that was at the end of last year. And it is now July of this year. So I suppose these processes take a very long time. So, a quick overview of what it is and what it isn't, I suppose. So, what it isn't. Well, I certainly don't have this glorious vision or calling that is leading me to Japan or anything in that sort of thing. I can't stand up here and sort of talk about how, you know, I was so greatly moved or I had a vision one night or something like that. In that sort of way. In fact, I don't even know for sure what specifically I'm going to be doing once I get there. So I'm going with a missionary organization. It's just going to be whatever they give me, I suppose. And I haven't even attended church before in Japan, so I have a very basic idea of sort of the demographic or Christian cultural situation there as well. So, but what it is I want to be useful to the Lord. And this is me going over there to see if I could potentially be more useful over there. So that's what it is. What it isn't. I really, really struggled to call myself a missionary. I just tell people that I'm going over with a missionary organization. Because I feel like everyone has their own preconceived ideas of what missionaries do. And I feel like I'm definitely not qualified. I haven't even... They've probably done like a decade of Bible college and extensive training. And for me, it's more just, oh, I'm going over with an organization to see how I can be helpful to them and take any opportunities that come my way, I suppose. So those are what it is and isn't, I suppose. But in the spirit of living in accordance with one's beliefs, this part of a poem that we heard one time in 180, a long time ago, that I no longer remember the context of, still stays with me very strongly. And it's, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. And when I am dying, how happy I'll be if the lamp of my life is burned out for thee. And that's how I want to live my life, and that's how I'll be striving to live my life, in such a way that lines up with that. And that's what I want to be able to say at the end of my life, I suppose. Yes. And yes, this is my newsletter sign-up QR code, I hope. It might not be, in which case, please let me know. And yes. And yes, and now, I suppose, we'll just go into the Q&A section. Thank you.
During this waiting period, are you sure, very sure all the time, or do you have some wavering time and not so sure? What are the obstacles you face? Do you have worries? How do you overcome that and all this? Can you share a bit?
Yes. I suppose that's a question that I don't need to say, oh, email about me and I'll get back to you later about it. Yeah, so I don't know. For some reason, while I think some people might think, oh, you're going to another country, sort of big decision, it hasn't really, maybe it hasn't sunk in yet or something, but it doesn't strike me as a massive move or change. It's just kind of like, oh, yes, I'll just be continuing my life as I would here, but just in a different country. So in that sense, it hasn't been such a big thing that I've had to waver too much about it, in a sense, or have my doubts, so to say. Although, like, I mean, my idea was that I'd apply at the end of, like, the year, and then I'd be able to go by, like, the end of April or March or something. And, you know, the sort of waiting time just sort of dragged on forever, and I was telling people I'm going to be leaving at the end of April, the end of May, the end of June, and now the end of July, I suppose. And I suppose, like, there were times where it's like, why is it never arriving, the paperwork, through the snail mail? And sort of like, oh, why is it taking so long? And then, like, you know, the right after I follow up, like, with an email, like, it will arrive in the mail. It was very much kind of like, you know, it will happen, like, when it happens. Like, everything is in the Lord's hands, sort of thing. Which I suppose, you know, if I get COVID, wonderful, it'll be in the Lord's hands as well, in that sense. But, like, I suppose there are times where it's kind of like, but I'm so unequipped for this, you know? I don't have, like, sort of the necessary training that people would expect would be needed. And I suppose it's, at the end of the day, it's more sort of, I'll offer whatever I can. So that was how I overcame it. And I trust that the Lord will make me useful to him in his own way as well.
Just curious, how are you being funded? I know that, like, Kylie and a few other people on the OMS, they have people committing a certain amount of sum to them regularly. I'm just wondering what is happening on your end.
Right. So, actually, I'll be going there on a more sort of volunteer status. So I'm not allowed to work there with my visa as well, because I have a religious worker visa. So I'll be living off my savings, which I have accumulated since high school, for this purpose, perhaps, yes. So I should be able to survive, basically. And then when I run out of money, I'll come back.
What are the ways that we can support you as you are in Japan?
Well, you can certainly support me through prayer. I will very much be living off your prayers, please, people. Whether it be, I don't know, there are some things that I'm worried about. First of all, I know that there is bad blood between the ocean, between China and Japan, and I'm almost scared to tell people that I'm Chinese, like, in to sort of, and they'll, like, already sort of be on their guard or something, or, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, maybe some people have bad experiences with Chinese people in the past. So, and the other thing is, everyone there with the organization is American, which I, again, have very little understanding of their culture and way of life, which potentially is not all that different from ours. Yes, so I really hope that there will be like a community there. And I really hope that there will be a team there, because I do believe that there is work to be done there. And that work would be done, could be done so much more productively, surely, in a team. So that's one of the things that I really wish, pray for that, guys, please.
I know you don't know exactly what you're doing over there, but can you give us sort of some ideas of what you could be doing over there and what the mission organization does in Japan?
What the mission organization does in Japan? So I believe OMS mission, which they've recently revised and reevaluated, is to focus on multiplication, in the sense that I think they've had the experience in the past in which once there have been converts, they're kind of like, great, we'll leave you with the local church, and then they've moved on. And then they've found that that's an unsustainable method almost, in terms of what they should be doing is discipling people in such a way that they can make more disciples, I suppose. So that's OMS mission. And in Japan, they've actually got a relatively long history. I believe that's where their organization initially started. So they have a network there with a sort of Wesleyan holiness background. And from what I've heard, it's very much an aging church as well, where, you know, most people are probably over 30, if not over 45. And the way they do things is very much stuck in that way. Like, it feels like from the people that have actually been to churches in Japan and have worked there for years, they say that it's almost like, you know, they're stuck 50 years ago. Like, nothing has changed since then. The believers are faithful, but it has just about zero attraction to anyone young, essentially. Like, there's no young people in the church. And I don't know. So that's one thing that I believe has, like, area for things to be pursued in which sense, how can we take the gospel to the young people in such a way that is easily accessible and consumable, and not something that they would instantly reject as either, oh, foreign, or oh, something for old people that they're not interested in? So I have some vague plans in that department. And in terms of what's already there on the ground, I'm actually not very sure, other than their English classes outreach thing and music outreach thing, which I think they run on a regular basis. So I believe one thing I may be doing once I'm there is teaching English, which is one of the only language I'm qualified to teach, or probably not. The language in which I'm most qualified to teach.
You said you hadn't attended church in Japan before. How much do you know about the church you'll be attending? Can you tell us anything about that?
Wow, they have not told me anything about the church that I'm going to be attending. So, not much, very much, really, other than it's in Tachikawa, which is kind of like the suburb next to it, next to the one that I'll be residing in. Yeah.
Okay, I have a few questions, but I'll just ask one at a time. What do you anticipate will be some cultural barriers that might be different between Australian culture and Japanese culture for the sake of the gospel?
Yeah, so for one, I think because we're a Western country in Australia, we have a certain sort of understanding of Christianity, essentially, even though it may not be sort of perfectly clear or correct, but more so than people in Japan do. And in fact, I think the regular person on the street probably has more understanding in terms of Christian doctrine and what the religion actually teaches than Japanese people do toward religion. So from my understanding in basic research that I've done and a very short period of time observation that may be entirely incorrect, but I will find out, is that I believe that Japanese people don't actually have a very, like, religion is not a big thing in Japan. So in the sense that religion just falls under culture, in the sense that Japanese people don't actually have a very, like, doctrine is not very much of a thing. Like, the ordinary Japanese person might say that they identify as Shinto or Buddhist, but they won't actually be able to tell you very much about what that, like, what the teachings of that religion really are. But they will be able to tell you about what some practices of it will be, like some ritual things that they follow that come from that religion. And so, sort of, religion is not so much about what it teaches so as, like, the culture and tradition that it's left, which has become very much entwined with Japanese culture. So, some, like, one thing that I do kind of anticipate, maybe incorrect, is very much kind of them going, oh, this is our culture and tradition, we don't want your foreign thing to come in and destroy our long-standing tradition or culture, sort of thing. Yes. And very much for Christianity to be, oh yes, it's just another cultural thing and we already have our own and we don't really need that sort of thing, I suppose. I actually read a very interesting article last night as I was doing a little bit of research on, like I mentioned before, how because Christianity was outlawed in Japan in the 1600s, it was forced underground. And at that point, like, Christianity did continue in some form, but it continued often, like, disguised as another religion. So, like, it might have been, like, Buddhism. Like, they claimed to be monks and did some things that the monks did, but also, like, secretly were chanting, like, Latin or something from the Bible. And actually, I read, like, an article in which people were talking about how this long tradition in our village where we're hidden Christians who chant these specific things is going to be lost because my son no longer wants to do it. And it's very important for us to do it because this is what our ancestors had preserved, in which you kind of look at it and go, oh, like, the kind of point has kind of evaporated and it's become more just tradition, cultural sort of thing. And yes, the other thing is Japan is a very collectivist country in which stepping out of line or trying to be different is very much sort of frowned upon as disturbing the unity. Like, why would you do that? And harmony, which is not very much, is very much frowned upon in Japan. So to be a Christian and live contrary to what the culture demands would be quite difficult, to what I say, and be quite a sacrifice for the ordinary Japanese person. Yes, my kind of answer.
I have a question. But before that, I praise God for the desire you have to serve Jesus. And every time I see come across a young man or woman, especially young people. I mean, I'm very encouraged. And I think as long as we have a heart and desire to serve Jesus, the Lord will change us and prepare and equip us. So one question is, maybe you have talked about this a bit, but I just try to help myself to understand you better so that I can know how to pray for you. Now, Some young people like to do a gap year during a uni course or during between the finishing uni and start to a lifelong career, for example, and do something. How do you see yourself different from this usual or even popular gap year break, you know, sort of things, for break from normal life? So your this year adventure, how do you think yourself or see yourself? Is it similar to a gap year, or like everyone do it
Do I answer that? I don't think I see it as very different to a gap year in the sense that people take gap years to travel the world and some people to discover themselves, I suppose, or look for something, I suppose. In which case, I would be taking a gap year to discover whether or not I may be useful to the Lord in Japan, and how. In which case, how? Yeah.
I wanted to ask, have you read much of the Bible in Japanese? And if do you have a Japanese Bible, or like, have you noticed any differences? I don't know.
Well, the answer to have you read the Japanese Bible should be, can you read the Japanese Bible? In which case the answer would be with a great, great difficulty, because, you know, studying Japanese for 10 years apparently does not give you enough kanji to read particularly smoothly. But I hope to be able to read the Japanese Bible. And I do have a bilingual-ish Japanese Bible with English, but only the New Testament. And one observation that I have made is that the way things are written seem maybe wrong again. And anyone who's read the Japanese Bible, please correct me. Or maybe it was just the translation that I got. Seemed very King James-esque. And, you know, like that sort of style of more formal or, you know, dated writing. Yes.
Can you give us a bit more detail about where you'll be living exactly? On your own, in a group, shared home, etc.?
Yep, so OMS Japan actually has land there. I believe they used to have land in Tokyo, and then they sold it and bought land out in the suburbs. So they have like a campus/compound thing. That's where I'll be living. So I'll be living in a one-bedroom apartment. I have no idea how big that might be. Potentially between 8 to 20, maybe, square meters in total. I have no idea. And yes, that's my just my apartment to myself. I've been permitted to purchase a fish as a companion. There is a shared laundry. So I will meet people when I'm doing the laundry. Wait, people from OMS, because only people from OMS live on the compound, yes. Not just strangers.
Can you cook?
Well, I am very good at following instructions, and that is, you know, all over the internet. Yes, survive.
That's another prayer point, folks.
Who's going to take care of your snails?
Actually, you see, I have an answer to this. Now, I've been advertising. Oh, yeah, some background. So I have these pets that I acquired, not purposefully. They actually piggybacked off. Okay, so I have a water snail that I bought some aquatic plants, and in there just happened to be a water snail for free, you know, because it came with the plants. And then I realized later that there were eggs on the shell of this particular snail, and I thought that they were the same species, but they weren't. So this poor snail, Felix, passed away shortly afterwards for unknown reasons. But these eggs hatched and survived and persevered until this day, and multiplied greatly. And they are my bladder snails, which I have been trying to give to other people, or, you know, leave with someone, you know, while I am not here. And my advertising was very unsuccessful until the other day we were on Zoom and I was telling Eunice about my snail. So I'm sure most of you know Eunice, who is at Kellyville most of the time. She, after I sent through three videos of my snails, did not express much interest and was like, oh, no, I don't think so. But, you know, after my insistence, she said that she would ask her brother, Timothy. And later on, the next day, or no, the following night, I got a message from her saying that they would be taking the snails. So, yes, my snails have found a new home with Eunice, hopefully. Now that I've announced it publicly, she can no longer back out of this.
How do you feel about forming relationships with Japanese people?
As I would with forming relationships with any other people, in the sense that, like, I hope it works out. I don't know what.
Oh, I guess like, with like cultural barriers and stuff, but also like in a brand new country where you won't know as many people as you do here. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's when everyone's prayers will be greatly needed. If you can just pray my new friends into existence, it would be wonderful. But yes, I will actively try to speak. So it really helps that I have been studying Japanese for 10 years and have some understanding of the culture. So it's not a completely foreign environment. Like if you dropped me in the middle of Germany, I would be much more worried about that than if you dropped me in Japan. And hopefully it all works out.
Okay, so we're just going to have maybe, is it all right if maybe two or three people can pray for Tiana before we finish?